You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
All right. Welcome to the Massive Report. We are so professional here at Hendox on High Street, where we assemble every week on Mondays, and usually we know when the show starts. But I thought we were testing microphones. You know what I do know?
I mean, the intro is playing.
Well, I can't hear it. It doesn't matter. The Massive Report, what does matter, the Massive Report is brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in developing, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. Mike Krosky is here. Bart Logan is here. Sam Fahmy is here. And later, we're going to have a guest from Australia who's an expert on the Houston Dynamo. I don't know how that happens. I look forward to finding out, though. The world is a large place, but yet it's a small place. And we're going to bring the world together from Australia to Houston to Columbus, Ohio at Hendox. That's what we're going to do. And we need the help because we have a lot to go over, because we also have a game with DC United at home on Wednesday. So for the first time this season, something that I didn't think of, what we would do when we had a game to review and two games to preview. And yet Sam figured it all out. Sam is producer par excellence. What was not excellent on Saturday was Portland 3 and Crew 1. And this is another, I feel like our pattern here, Mike and Bart, is that we look good coming out of the curtains and down the runway, and everyone looks wonderful and they're doing their catwalk, and then they fall off the stage at the end. This team is not finishing. And it's the number one. Everybody knows it. This isn't a mystery. I felt like the buildup until we fell behind 2-0 looked great and inspiring, and then nothing.
Yeah, I thought from a defensive standpoint, that was the poorest I think we've seen them play. I mean, they were discombobulated. The center back pairing of Saro and Mensah, who are generally going to be very tight. They have a good rapport with each other. Man, they looked off. I mean, they were off their marks on two of the goals. The third goal, people were just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. I mean, that was sad. Now, from the finishing standpoint, you're right. I mean, Higuain was clicking with the passes. I mean, he was sending through balls over the top. You know, cheeky. You know, we talked about cheeky balls that he was doing a few weeks ago, not hitting. They were hitting this time, but we just couldn't get it in the back of the net. And it's a riddle that I really am curious to see how Porter and his staff solve.
We can't have the back fall apart like they did when we're having so much trouble scoring. It can't happen. And this was a team that was struggling.
Oh, yeah. And that's, I'll tell you, it reminded me of that game against the Portland Timbers in December of 2015 that we won't talk about anymore, but only so much of in that. You know, granted, in that game, obviously, the goals were quick succession right, you know, at the top, and the Crew never able to really get their feet underneath them. I felt like this was a team that was building up, creating those chances. Giassi Zardes had, I think, that header that he put wide, and there are a couple other good chances, and then bang, bang. Done, and then they're playing catch up the rest of the game. This team, I don't think, has won a single game when they've conceded a goal so far this season. So you knew it was going to be a bit of a lift. They do get a very nice goal from Pedro Santos, and just the perfect internet goal. You know, scored in the 69th minute on April the 20th. But
memes galore.
But aside from that, not really too much to work with. Obviously, the last goal. You know. That's that live by the sword, die by the sword. And I was actually, you know, happy to kind of see the approach Caleb Porter took to try to, you know, push for that tie. Maybe it's partially he wanted to get some fresh legs in there because of the rotation, because we talked about this game coming up Wednesday against DC United. But overall, still a very disappointing result. And credit to Portland, who's had been stinking up the place, but really seemed to have a solid game plan for the Crew.
It was ironic that we almost sniped a goal. And then did snipe a goal from glaring goalkeeping errors.
Mm, absolutely.
The one that we did get, I don't understand why he was in such a hurry to get the ball out of his hand. And it's like he didn't – he closed his eyes and just threw it.
I believe he slipped.
Oh, okay. All right.
You couldn't really see it on the
TV. But he was in a hurry.
Yeah, there was no reason to get a counter started. I don't know if there's like, hey, we're finally scoring goals. We have some momentum. Let's get the ball down the field, right? Something like that. I don't know. But, you know, when it comes to the almost goal you're talking about, I mean, and it was at the ninth minute, Higuain just blazes one right by the post. I mean, again, on Jeff Antonella, just essentially gifting him the ball.
Yeah.
But if it had it not gotten caught up in Higuain's feet, that's what happened. Right. It got kind of caught up in his feet. Had that not happened, he could have settled himself a little bit and really, you know, struck the ball with the way we know he can.
It would have been a different game. And, absolutely, you know, I was ready to tweet about Robinho, and I was going to propose his new nickname, Johnny Cash, because when the game was going right, he was everywhere, man. Mm-hmm. He was flying out of the back to join the attack, and he was flying back to do cover, the dirty work. Mm-hmm. He was everywhere, man. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready. Ooh, people are going to love this tweet. They're going to, and it's such a great song. And
absolutely,
maybe people will listen to the song and enjoy it and get into Johnny Cash. It would have been a whole thing. And then they scored and scored again, and I just put my phone away. It's like, well, this is going to fall flat. No one's going to care.
Well,
but he did play well, right?
He did. And, you know, and then he got, well, we saw the heavy touch again. We saw that again. There were
maybe
times
I'm getting too caught up in just the – I've always loved players that are end-to-end and just work their butts off. I've always loved players like that.
Oh, absolutely.
That. And so maybe that's me getting caught up in the kind of player that I like.
I think, you know, you'd also be watching and it – as a fan, I'm frustrated in seeing him go and why are you going and trying to attack and beat three guys on your own? And then, God damn it, he beat three guys on his own and get out. But then that, you know, that last piece still seems to be missing. And whether it's, you know, a hard touch here, whether it's, you know, a poor cross or unable to get it on target, you know, there's still that bit of his game that needs to be refined. But, I mean, the things that you can't really teach, you know, that just skill and awareness, it's so encouraging to see. But and also, frankly, I was happy to see how ticked off he was to be subbed off in the 60th minute.
He was livid. Mm-hmm. Red.
And
about that.
I think that's good to see that sort of.
There was no high five going, go get him.
No.
Go get him.
Yeah. And I think, I think
he just
that was
went, sat down.
As much because of, again, trying to get a rotation, knowing you've got these games in, and also wanting to see what exactly do we have from Justin Meram here. We'll probably get to that a little bit later, but still a little bit wanting, to say the least. You like to see that fire, too, not just the skill.
Go ahead, Mike. Oh, no, see, that's the thing with players, though. They're focused on that game, that minute, right then and
right
there. Caleb Porter has to look at the big picture. Him and his staff need to they need to look at it that way. Players never do. So I understand why he's ticked off, but you have to understand from Caleb Porter's side, hey, we have three games in 8 days. You're going to get your minutes.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I liked seeing the fire, and I looked at the way he played that game, and he could have gone in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. He could have gone the entire 90 and been just as strong at the end. He is so fit, and if he can just clean up the touches, I think he's the least of our problems.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
an answer to a lot of our issues as well going forward. So you look at the rest of this club, and it's just not clicking in the final third.
Well, you know, I thought Caleb Porter, you know, when he went away from what the Crew typically run, which are the inverted wingers, where you have, you know, Pedro mm-hmm. being left-footed on the right and vice versa on the other
why
side.
Why do you
right?
do that?
Well, so why you play with inverted wingers is so you can cut in and strike with your more dominant foot.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's easy for a player like Santos who's left-footed, and we saw it on the goal that he scored because they switched him back over.
I would have been so much better in my high school team because I'm left-footed if my coach would have done the invert, because he always played me on the left.
Well, I mean, but that's how the Crew started the game mm-hmm. was having Rubinho on the right, Santos on the left because he
it
wanted
makes
to get
sense
more crosses.
When you think about it.
Yep. Yeah. Now, I think it makes more sense in certain types of formations, 4-4-2s or things like that. 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, like what the Crew play, I don't love that, but I understand what Porter was trying to do. He's trying to get something different,
smart,
right? He's like, hey, let's just give this a whirl, and especially with the way the Portland Timbers defense had been playing this whole season. I think Porter said,
That's a weakness. Let's exploit it. But the problem with that is we don't have a team of players that are have an aerial presence whatsoever. Now, it doesn't mean every goal from across has to be an aerial battle, right? You know, it could come through deflections. It could come through, you know, pulling the defense.
And it seems like it has to be that at that at this point. It has to be not a fluke, but it has to be
– garbage goal.
Yeah. You know, and when I was a kid, I was – and I always tell people, it's like, go to the front because that's where the goal – so many of my goals were complete garbage. So I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I feel like we're having to rely on that, and we're not getting enough of the simple goals. Not simple, but, you know, it's in, it's in. Well, you know, it's over and it's in.
Three of the eight goals this year have come off of set pieces. Yeah. So almost half. You cannot keep that going and expect to be successful. Those are goals that, hey, they're bonus and they're best to score because you work your butt off in training. And when it happens, it's the best, right? But if you're counting on those to lead the way and to keep your team afloat, it's not going
to
happen.
We've got to start. So the bottom line is, if I'm reading you guys right, is we have got to start scoring in the run of play.
100%. That's when, all I wanted to see in this game. I didn't care what the score even was, if they tied, even if they lost, but if they scored a couple of goals in the run of play, I would have been happy, would have thought, hey, that's progress, but we didn't. We scored sort of in the run of play, but that was more of a fluke goal, if anything.
Yeah, it was. It really was a fluke goal.
And I don't know if the problem is, you know, I think it was probably safe to say we all kind of figured that Giassi Zardes wasn't necessarily going to be a 16-goal scorer this year. Regress a little bit more toward the mean. Not a two-goal scorer either. But you're looking for – and I was kind of thinking about this. Is the problem that we're not getting enough secondary scoring or that we're only getting secondary scoring right now? Because Zardes, you know, he's got the three goals, but those have just come in two games. The other games, they have been, you know, more or less invisible. And it's been a problem for this team for a while under multiple regimes, you know, going back to even with Ola Kamara, where this team has been so reliant on that striker, that man up top, putting in the goals, and, you know, the goals have been decreasing from Frederico Higuain, from the wingers last year. You couldn't get anything. This year, if Pedro Santos continues to score, and if you can get, you know, chip in 5-6 from, you know, Robinho or maybe a Justin Miram, if Frederico Higuain can get in there, but we've yet to see him tickle the twine yet, and it's just concerning if we're going to have to continue to really just rely so much on the striker, on Giassi Zardes, ostensibly because, you know, Patrick Mullins isn't seeing any games. Josh Williams is only getting garbage time. We might see them. I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, a combination of them over these next couple of games. But they need to start getting some scoring from the guys up top.
My thought is, when it comes to JJ, I've said this before, I hate to criticize somebody like Porter because he has more soccer knowledge in his pinky than I'll ever have in my life, okay? But bringing him in at that point in time was useless.
I was surprised to see him. Mm-hmm. I really was.
The 70th or 75th minute is when he should have been brought in to change the dynamic of the game a little bit. He scored two goals. Again, it's the USL. I get it. But he scored two goals for Birmingham Legion, one with his noggin, by the way. So if all last week training was about getting crosses in, in the game they got 28 crosses. More, I think, combined more than two games together this season. Why not put in the guy who can get his head on it? I mean, and not in the 88th minute. So, I don't know. That I thought was frustrating.
Yeah. I was definitely surprised to see him. We're kind of at a crossroads here where the team is almost a victim of its early point success. They were able to rack up some victories. They weren't pretty, but you get some points. You're on the top of the table for a little bit, and maybe that masked over what we were all seeing from the very beginning. And again, it's early. It's only April 22nd. It's a long season, but I think now is the time to really start, and it's hard to do three games in 8 days, but now is the time in this juncture of the season where we have got to start addressing scoring goals in the run of play. However you do it, whatever combination of players it is, and it could be a combination we haven't even thought of yet, well, but you know, somebody's got to emerge as a scorer here.
I applaud Porter and his staff are trying to do something different. That goes against conventional wisdom in terms of this lineup and the formation that they run by not having inverted wingers, having them on their more natural side and sending the ball in. But at the same time, you have to give your players the best odds to be successful. And I think with this group, to focus solely on that probably wouldn't work. And one thing I noticed in the locker room afterwards is a very, very dejected Patrick Mullins.
Mm-hmm.
He was just sitting at his locker, and this was 25 minutes after the game probably, maybe even longer, just sitting there, and he was just kind of staring a little bit. Yeah. And I think he's in his head, he's like, I could have made a difference here. You know, because every striker thinks
he
that.
He wants – strikers have to believe that.
Absolutely.
It's in their job description. You have to have that arrogance.
Absolutely.
And we need – the buildup, again, is great. And we need that person that's like, I'm scoring goals.
Well, and
I'm
I think that's what makes it even more concerning about Giassi Zardes, because you did – I mean, there are obviously the opportunities that he missed. There's the handball. But yeah. then I'm trying to recall
that was
what
a weird sequence there. Yeah.
But he ended up with a ball, a great ball on that the right side as they were attacking toward the Nord deck. And he has no idea that ball's there, eventually chases it down because he's got the speed. But there's no – he looked to try to feed it to Higuain instead of take a touch and take the shot himself. And it just – it was one of those, where's this – Jossie, you are the striker. You scored 16 goals last year. You need to go in on net on that instead of trying a pass to Higuain that was never going to go anywhere.
Yeah, through three defenders essentially. Yeah, there's no chance there. And
it's worrisome.
Yeah, be unselfish. As a striker, nobody's going to – especially in this situation, nobody's going to be pissed off at Zardes if he's a little selfish.
No. And I think we talked about this last week, if not recently, that we need someone to – the bottom line is we need someone to be selfish and start taking some good whacks at the goal and stop trying to find this perfect look that's never going to be there. And you tell kids that.
Right.
Don't turn away a shot on goal trying to find that look that's like this unicorn look that's, you know, you'll remember for it. You'll remember on your deathbed the perfect look I had at the goal. They don't happen. You've got to take – and then pick up the garbage. You know, I think they're just overcomplicating this.
It seems like everyone else but Pedro Santos, as we've kind of talked about, is still living in that Greg Berhalter system where it is, we need to work. This is your duty. This is – or, you know, Robinho, a guy who doesn't know any better and hasn't been in that. But everyone else where here's where I'm supposed to be. I need to – no, I need to play this, and it needs to be that perfect pass set up, you know, build up instead of just that. And Pedro Santos, he's been unleashed this year. And he's got goals.
I saw a lot of great passes on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a lot of great passes. I wonder how much they miss Harrison if they're still trying to play that way. I would have to think they miss him a lot because he was an important part of the attack.
I mean, the outside backs have not been getting up quite like we saw in the beginning of the season. This game, you know, Jimenez was completely unimpactful. I thought Francis was actually a little more involved. Mm-hmm. But also I think, again, if you're going to go with the natural-sided play, it kind of negates a little bit of that fullback need.
Okay.
So, because, you know, the idea with inverted wingers, those guys, as you get closer to the goal, they kind of start making diagonal runs to goal, which opens up the wide channel space for the fullbacks. You don't need that quite as much if you're playing more wide as that winger on the natural side. So,
and it's one of those situations where, you know, we're not going to have him, so complaining about it is a moot point. But Milton Valenzuela, boy, you'd love to see what he could do in a game like this, as well as obviously bringing Harrison Offal back. And I think what we're probably 3-4 weeks away from him hopefully rejoining the lineup, but you know, this is a guy on the other side of 30 too, so I think expectations need to be tapered.
Well, and Caleb Porter took this job pretty late in terms of when you would like to hire a coach. And we all know the circumstances. They are what they are. And so there's going to be some ramp-up time as far as him learning his personnel and trying to figure out. So we should give them credit for what they've been able to sock away as far as points. This is a playoff-contending team. There are a lot of things that need to be cleaned up. For the first time, we saw – well, not the first time, but it's more often than not, the defense is tight and organized and compact, and we saw We didn't see that on Saturday. But I would like to count on that going forward. I'm not too worried about it. And obviously the goalkeeping will be great. So it's not a disaster. It's just a game, you know. And Portland, for whatever reason, seems to play well here.
Well, this was a very typical MLS game where it's the team that, you know, has, you know, been playing well or at least getting results against a team that's been playing like garbage. They come in to that team's home and beat them. I mean, that's such an MLS result. It's amazing. Yeah. So, and hey, credit to Portland. They did what they needed to do. Yeah. And again, I don't want to make it seem like a crap fest on Porter and what they're trying to do. I like that he's trying some things. Mm-hmm. I love it because that's what you need to do. I don't know. I just don't know if that was maybe the best route. But, hey, you live and you learn. Great thing is we have two games coming up in a span of 5 days.
So. I think of all weeks to have this kind of compact group of games, this is – they always say this about baseball. It's like, well, you lost 11-0, but you get to play tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We get to play on Wednesday. And I think for this bunch, it's really good. And to have the game at home, not have to travel. And the weather's going to be good, so turn out, see the game. Are we giving away tickets? We are. Okay, listen to the Massive Report podcast, this one right now. And that's how you're going to win tickets to Wednesday's match. They're doing the $5 happy hour again, right?
Oh, right.
Ooh. So you roll out of work, it's Wednesday, you're like, whoa, I still got two more days of work. You go and you have a great time at Moffray Stadium, you take advantage of the happy hour, and you see DC United. One of the Tiffany franchises of this league.
One of the original rivals for the crew.
We will preview the game later and wonder aloud if we're going to see Rooney at all. If so, how much? Because they played last night. Mm-hmm. It's a game that they need points in. It's a conference game. I would think that they would want Rooney to start and play as much as humanly possible, but we will see. In the meantime, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to put a gold star on the top of the page of the best player. And we're going to shake our finger at someone who could have been better. We're also going to talk about Deadspin is throwing shade on MLS again, calling it a Ponzi scheme. It's this. I enjoy the articles just because they're kind of mean spirited and fun. But it's not entirely unfair, but it's a little over the top. But you know, it's a topic, and we'll talk about it next as we return on the Massive Report in a moment. I nailed the cue, didn't I, Sam? We're back on the Massive Report here as we have been tasked with determining our best and could have been better player. So it's kind of a politically correct way of saying they didn't play very well. That's fair. That's fine. I want to be positive, but I don't want to be negative. I'm Brian Phillips from CD1025. Bart Logan is here. Mike Krosky, Sam Faume. Later, we will invite a new friend in who has been on the show before to specifically preview the Houston Dynamo. And we need help in that area. I mean, it's hard. There are so many teams. And we'll get to that here in a second. There might even be more MLS teams. You'll be going, you could play a game, a bar game. Is there an MLS team in this city or not? And people would have a hard time. We'll get to that here in a moment. Mike, your best player from Saturday night against Portland.
I have to go with Higuain. And while he did not score, I thought, as we've seen, well, throughout his whole career, but certainly this season, his passing has just been absolutely on fire. Mm-hmm. On fire. And he's putting guys like Zarda and Robinho and Santos in a position to get the ball and go towards goal and get a strike. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily happening, but he's at least setting them up. And, again, I feel like a broken record, so I've said this a few times. His heat map is unreal for a guy.
What's a heat map for the uninitiated?
Okay. Essentially, it just shows, if you have a soccer field, it shows where that player has been running throughout the field. And for a gentleman, 34 years old, center mid, a lot of guys start to really just hang around in the circle, or the center circle, or maybe towards the top of their offensive box.
Henry's heat map at the end of his career was like a dot, right?
Well,
is that what we're talking about here?
Not quite that bad. That's more like Carlos Valderrama, if you really want to go old school.
It was all hair.
Yes.
That was most of the heat map was that hair.
Absolutely. But his heat map is all over the place, which is great. And again, it is worrisome to a degree because of the compact schedule. We've talked about this before. But he's doing it, and I love it. Yeah. And I think he was absolutely the best player of the game.
All right, Bart.
I'll have to go with Sanch, and you know, the goal we'll take, but again, good movement from him starting off at that inverted wing, or rather on his wing.
Was he better there than his normal position?
It's difficult because you've also seen with Caleb Porter and to a lesser extent with Greg Berhalter, you know, not being afraid to switch those wingers either. So it's not like he and Robinho don't have the green light to switch over when there's an opportunity. But I thought he looked good on that side. There was some great service into the box, and then obviously the goal, which again they serve it up to you on a silver platter, but oh. For him to sail that in there, it looked like Frederico Higuain. My first thought when I see that sailing in was, "People, oh no, that was Sanch again,
your boy."
Yep, my boy. Hey, he surpassed crew legend Gaston Saro on the all-time crew scoring list there with his third.
Third, that's true. That's a good point. Climbing the charts, guys.
Wow. Okay.
Well, you know, here's a little tidbit about that. My favorite part about, well, besides him scoring the goal, but if you. Were you at the game, Brian, or did you watch it on TV?
Okay. I was watching on the tube.
Okay. My favorite part, because I watched the highlights when I got home from the game. As soon as Santos hit it, Dwight Bird just going, got it! And you didn't really know if it was going to go in, but him just being the brilliant soccer mind that he is, he knew, even when the ball was still 30 yards away, that's in. It was just a perfect Dwight Bird just call, and I love it.
Yeah, those goals are fun, because so often you're like out of your chair, because we've all seen it. The goalie commit some sort of grievous error, and they are off their line so far, and you're like, and it's like the one that Higuain couldn't get off his foot. It's always, it's such a big, juicy steak that you just, it's like, you want to dig in, you want to eat the whole thing all at once, and that's not good. You got to cut it up, but you don't have time to cut it up, and it's, you know that even though the goalie's so far off his line, he's scrambling to get back, and it's like a bad dream, and it's like, oh, no. And you're watching at home. It's like, I've seen more of those miss than go in.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's to have at least one go in is fun. You know?
Well, you know, the goal being open still from that far and knowing that you have to get it just the right height under the bar,
sure,
but over either a defender or a keeper running back. And to do it in a split second, it's harder than it looks.
Yeah. All right, so we've established our best players. Could have been better, Bart.
So I go with Justin Miram on this one, and I know that's not fair because obviously only had 30 minutes of play, but I think this was a huge opportunity for him.
He needed to score, didn't he?
At least needed to make an impact.
Yeah.
And to be coming on, to get more time than he's probably gotten as a sub combined since he's come off on these sub appearances in a game where Caleb Porter said, hey, guys, go up and get a goal. That's how we conceded that third one there in the death. And to just not create anything. It'll be interesting to see. He's obviously going to get another opportunity, you would think, at least, over these next two games. And I think they're very, very important games for Justin Miram, because if he can't come in and start making an impact, obviously Robinho looks to have that position locked down, but you've got Nico Hansen who's getting healthy, and I think he needs to really, you know, he doesn't have the relationship with Caleb Porter that he had with Greg Berhalter, and he's another guy who's not getting any younger. And so I think it's critical for him to make a difference here, and I think it'll be just good for him personally, too. You thought that there were a couple, you know, chances early in the season where he might have, you know, got something to hitch on to and build off of, but since then, it's just been really disappointing, and I wanted to see a lot more.
Well, you know, with Nico Hansen, I think as the season goes on and he becomes fully healthy, I think we're going to see more of him. And he's he's a natural winger, right? And that's not something that, you know, I mean, that's not the case with Miram. He was a forward in college who converted to being a winger. So, you know, little subtle nuances of that position, you know, it's almost second nature for a guy like Nico, even though he's younger, not as experienced, but that's what he's been playing his whole life.
Okay, I think we'll see more of Miram, because we have to. We need to, like, mix and match here, because three matches in 8 days.
Yeah.
This is an important span for him, I think. We need to see a goal out of him the next two games. Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
100%. 100%. Absolutely. If he wants to show Porter and the new staff that he's an impactful player, what better time to do it when the team is just desperate for goals? And in a time where you have three games in a week, okay, this is your time. Get two goals in these next two games. That's going to, A, I think, build momentum for him as a player, but B, for the team. It could be a domino effect. Somebody's got to be the one to kick this off.
Absolutely. Mike, a player that could have been better.
I hate to say this, but it was Mensa.
Okay.
I was very disappointed in him just because the bar is so high with him, because you just go, it's Mensa. We're fine. We don't have to worry about him. He's the guy I go and he's the least likely person that you're going to see a poor performance from. And for me, I thought this was absolutely the worst game of the season for him. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, man marking was bad. It seemed like there's some confusion between the center backs, between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And to me, that starts with the communication. So I just thought, for a guy of his caliber and the way he's been playing this year, he's raised the standard so high. To play so mediocre was that was disappointing.
Is that an artifact of Sorrow missing, what was it, three games? Do you lose that connection that fast? Because they had it.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to overanalyze everything. Sometimes,
well, that's guys, what we're here for.
I know, right? You know,
that is literally our job.
That's okay. That's fair. You know, but because he had a bad game, or the two of them had a bad game, doesn't mean that's going to be the way it is for the rest of the season. I think overall, we've seen those two work very well together. Even negate the goals, which can up the game grades a little bit. You know, when stars go. But even just defensively, their real true priority, their job. They've been as sound as you can ask for. So one hiccup along the way, you know, as long as it doesn't turn into a trend.
And he's an unnecessary Giassi Zardes handball away from getting a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was frustrating.
Yeah.
And crazy. Mm-hmm. So before we go to the break, Deadspin taking aim again at MLS. And this is probably the same writer who came up with that piece.
Ainsley or something?
Yeah. Yeah. He had that piece, Is MLS a Ponzi Scheme? This was during the whole Austin saga. Mm-hmm. And I read it, and I was so mad at MLS that I'm like, yeah! Rah! Well, Ponzi Scheme, that's a – I mean, it's Deadspin. It's they want you to click. I get it. I enjoy reading Deadspin because their opinions are so extreme, and it's fun. Yeah. You know, it's just sports.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we don't have to take it that seriously. But, you know, they know from clickbait. And he's back with his part two here. The headline, MLS, which is definitely not a Ponzi scheme, wants to expand by adding three new teams. Here's the part that stunned me, because the old figure was $150 million to get in, where, you know, the guy that loves queso found a way around that.
Mm-hmm.
But now they want to add three new teams. We haven't even finished awarding the franchises under the old figure.
Exactly.
Of $150 million. They still need to award one more, right?
I believe
so. Or
two. I think, yeah.
I've lost track.
Oh, no,
I gotta
it's,
be a,
it's one.
It's one.
Let's see.
And now they've announced plans to add three new teams, but if – and some of these cities have been in the running for a long time. Now it costs $200 million to get into MLS. And they take the money and they divide it between the owner operators.
Right.
And after a while, eyebrow raised, because as you mentioned, Mike, when Chivas came into the league, and you're like, who? What?
Yeah.
Chivas was always that team you go, well, I know there's a famous team in Mexico called Chivas. That was the idea, that they would try
to... Oh, is this an international friendly?
They would try to expand the brand into America, and they put this team in L.A. called Chivas USA, and they shared a park with L.A. Galaxy. And I remember a few years ago, not that many years ago, we opened at Chivas in early March, and there were literally no people there.
No,
I believe that was their final season. It just never worked. And then a few years later, they build a new stadium and put a different team in L.A. I think they're doing pretty well. So,
would you like to know why?
New stadium?
Well, yeah, of course that helps, and it's in L.A. But the ownership for Chivas USA was they were full of buffoons. All right? Okay.
I don't know who these people were. Who were they?
So it was the owner of Chivas Guadalajara. Okay. And then Antonio Cuey. I worked at Chivas. It was a shit show.
You worked for Chivas USA?
I did.
What were you? What was your job?
I was in ticket sales. I was an account executive.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And
so you were pretty bored then.
It was the hardest sell in the world because this was at the time Beckham was in the with the Galaxy. Who the hell is going to go see Chivas over the Galaxy? All right. But let me just give you one little tidbit of how smart these guys were at Chivas.
Uh-huh.
They thought, well, if we make it free and just make it to where the gates are open, we should be able to get more people in. With more people, we'll be able to get more sponsorship dollars, right?
Oh, boy.
So how you so you were in ticket sales for a team that was literally papering the entire house.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that was the thing.
How many tickets did you think, season tickets, did Chivas sell at their height?
That's a great question. I honestly
I had
don't
no
recall.
Idea about this. You about about this, Mike.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
I will say, at Chivas, our proudest moment was the Chivas LA Galaxy game.
That's your big draw.
We sold that out with a lot of actual Chivas fans. It was people rooting, maybe not Chivas fans, but people rooting against the Galaxy But we sold that out, which was great. But outside of that, it was a dumpster fire. Nobody was at the games. My wife at the time loved it because I would get her field side seats totally free. Just have it. They're open.
Sure. Every seat was free.
So that's what they wanted to do. But our director of ticket sales said, you cannot do that.
You
cannot do that. And they fought back and forth.
Well, you can't do that because then people will expect to never pay to get in.
Exactly.
And zero value.
And in MLS, everybody's done it. You know, it's like a drug. It's like, oh, we just need to goose the gate a little bit, make it back in concessions and parking.
Right.
However that situation is. But that was $11 million to get in. They folded.
In 2004.
When did they fold?
So the league took them over in 2000 and...
So they still exist in some sort of
ether
in the Galaxy?
No, so the league took them over and then disbanded them.
They went
away for a couple years, and LAFC came into the town with a whole new ownership group, whole new everything. Right. So there's no ties. Chivas is done. I think maybe it was 2013 or so.
So 11, 15?
LAFC has like 28 owners.
Yeah, I know. They have like everybody who's ever been in a bad 80s movie.
Like who? Name names.
Let's see.
They got like Will Ferrell.
Tony Robbins.
Tony Robbins. Speaking of like pyramid schemes.
Wow. This guy is perfect.
Yeah.
Tony Robbins.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does he stroll in the locker room with those $1 million teeth and give a motivational speech?
He has to.
That makes no sense. Self-help.
That explains why they've been so damn good this year, I think. It's
Family
all Tony
Guy
Robbins.
Just did a takedown of Tony Robbins. Not too long ago.
I think they've done a few over the years. But anyway, how did we get on? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, $11 million in 2004 for expansion for Chivas. Now it's $200 million. So in 15 years, you're telling me it's went up $189 million? I don't know if the value of the league's quite that high.
And I think one of the points that they bring up in this article, which you know I'm kind of interested to hear from you, Mike and Brian, what you think, but looking at the delusion of the player pool as well. Obviously, in MLS, we've got, you know, the expansion drafts, which no other league, or at least, you know, outside of North American sports, has anything like. Obviously, there's a huge pool that you can pull from in MLS, but also because of MLS rules about, you know, international slots, there are, you still only have, you know, so many that you can get if it's international players. If you're like Crew and have a great international scouting network where you can unearth those gems. And when you're adding, you know, 6-7 teams in a 5-6 year span, I remember in the NHL in the late 90s, early 2000s, when they, you know, added the Blue Jackets, Nashville, Minnesota, all those teams in quick succession. And it did. The quality of the game dipped. If you watched hockey in the early 2000s, it's just all trap. And, I mean, that wasn't just because of the diluted talent pool. But as we're seeing, I think in MLS, they almost might take that as a positive because you're saying, hey, look, we still got all this parity because everybody's got a lot of subpar players. But it's disappointing to see, and especially when you look at the history of the Crew, where it seems like every single expansion draft they're losing quality players and they're getting punished for doing a good job
being
of
good
scouting
scouts.
And good player
because
development.
Because we have to be. Mm-hmm. We have to be because we're never going to get those superstar designated players ever. Well, I heard these words come from Don Garber's face, his cake hole, that he wanted MLS to be a top six league in the world. Mm-hmm. And I got news for you, pal. You know, like, do you ever – I wouldn't know where to watch the Chinese Super League if you held a gun to my head. I want to watch the Chinese Super League. I wouldn't know where to find it. The point is that they are spending – hundreds of millions of dollars on talent to get guys into that league. That's
nobody cares.
Obviously, mm-hmm. there's a billion people that live in China. Right. I would hope that people that live in China care because mm-hmm. they're spending a lot of money to recruit these players. The point is the competition for top players, you can't just snap your finger, Garber, and go, we're going to be a top six league in the world in 5 years. It's just going to happen. Well, how? The expenditure on talent is going to be colossal. That's not going to happen. I don't swear on this. Am I allowed to swear on this show? That's bullshit. That's never going to happen.
Well,
know your place. This can be. This league is fun. It can be continue to be a good thing that enriches all of our lives. But let's not fool ourselves.
This anybody that has miserably failed to know
their place. Well, that's true. Don Garber. And
the man who brought us NFL Europe, you're saying he doesn't have the best ideas for running a league?
I'm pointing at my phone now, and I'm gesturing at my phone in this article, because while this guy, the writer of this Deadspin piece is smug and so forth, so is Don Garber.
And
Don Garber is so full of himself.
Well, yeah,
but
no.
there has to be an end game here. You cannot put a McDonald's on every corner. You can't do it. After a while, you have a McDonald's everywhere. You cannot put an MLS franchise. Guess who made this mistake? And we talked about this last week. Mm-hmm. North American Soccer League, the original 80s iteration, going back to the 60s, of the North American Soccer League. That's was their ruination.
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Was they put teams. They had teams in Tulsa, and Edmonton.
Jacksonville.
And Calgary and Jacksonville.
What was the next team that you suggested for Kai Kamara?
I forget.
It was somewhere in like North Dakota or something.
Oh, yeah, Fargo. Minot.
Oh, Minot,
North Dakota.
There you go.
It's you cannot keep doing this. Well, after a while, that your existing structure has to live on its own. And you, what if the economy takes a downturn?
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of tech bros that aren't going to if their net worth drops by so many hundreds of millions. They're not going to want this play thing anymore.
Well, here's the thing. I think what Garber's doing is setting up for a massive, and no pun intended there, given the title of the program, but a massive TV deal.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah. But hold on. After the 2026 World Cup, when it's hosted in North America, he's expecting that to be the coup de grace for the league, because you'll be in 30, maybe even 32 cities by then. You would have just capitalized.
You're the size of the NFL in terms of team number.
Right.
But you have the current TV deal that's ending in 2 years, and the league supposedly instructing teams to not make any new deals
beyond that. Yep, exactly.
So you're going to have something else before that.
Absolutely. So, and I think that's going to be, instead of the normal 7, 8, 9 year deal, it's going to be 4, and I think they're going to make it short term, and then boom, after that 2026 World Cup, they'll have that one, that TV cycle end, and then the Garber's just expecting TV companies
just
to
because
throw
no one is
money
cutting the cord, and cable television is just it's gangbusters right now, folks.
Here's the come to Jesus moment, and Garber is looking at baseball. Baseball is not a national sport anymore. But people, if they're into baseball, they're into their team. And that's what fuels these local TV deals, whatever they are. And some of them, like the LA Dodgers, are ridiculous. And ironically, they're on the same platform that we were during the PSV years, that they're on Spectrum Sportsnet. A lot of people in LA cannot turn on their TV and watch the Dodgers, which in a market that size is an outrage.
Right.
But what he's looking at is even the lowly Miami Marlins have a TV deal that brings in a sizable amount of revenue. God knows why. Because they're unwatchable. They draw no fans. They have no fans. Well, so I think what he's looking at is, well, if Major League Baseball can do it, that's a sport for the last century. Mm-hmm. We're going to be the sport for the next century. But you've diluted the talent pool, as you say, Bart, so much. And you're going to have to go out further and further. I don't see Major League Baseball here. I don't see it in Sacramento and other cities. We're not the largest market in MLS, and that's mm-hmm. fine. It's okay. We figured it out. It's the rest of these clowns that need to figure it out. And Don Garber could learn a lot from us. But, you know, he has all the answers. And I'm sorry, I'm on another mm-hmm. rant here. But this is ridiculous. You've got to stop and figure out how you can make what you have work.
100%.
It just shows how bunk also that the attendance arguments and any of that is, because again, look at Major League Baseball. You've got, you know, select a section night in, you know, Miami Stadium. Also another, you know, one where, oh, by the way, that was completely publicly financed.
Sure.
Boy, they fleeced Lurie or whatever who is down
Jeffrey
there.
Lurie.
Yeah, yeah.
The worst owner in sports until he finally sold.
Good Lord.
But, yeah, that guy, you could write books on that guy.
But all the, you know, and so for them to go and, you know, not we've saved the crew and so we need to get off that, but for them to go and drag this market for over a year talking about attendance and the importance of attendance when, by at least maybe not by his own admission, but certainly by what the appearance of his actions and intentions, Don Garber is showing that no, what's more important is the television deal, which rightfully so when you look at the actual money where it comes from. But for them to then use that and hold that over Columbus's head, or if they're going to go and use that against, you know, a Philadelphia or Montreal, you know, other teams where you're starting to hear the same sort of buzzwords that they were talking about with Columbus, when it's all just clearly about this money. And again, by the way, they're also, you know, there's that weird incestuous relationship between U.S. soccer, MLS, yeah. and some. It's mind-boggling, and I don't know that it's a Ponzi scheme, but it sure as heck isn't the best way that they could be running the highest level soccer in the United States.
Well, look, here's the deal. When it comes to this league, what Don Garber is, you know, we've talked about the term attendance porn in Atlanta and Seattle and all this, yeah. right? When it comes to this league, there's what? Off the top of my head, I can think of five or six teams that are legitimately struggling to bring fans mm-hmm. into the gate. All right? Columbus is struggling. New England is struggling. Red Bull is putting mm-hmm. up tarps
oh, yeah.
in their stadium. Colorado never draws anybody.
San Jose
has a beautiful stadium, mm-hmm. not drawing anybody. Chicago, that's a dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. All right, that's off top. Hey, and I hate to break
Texas.
It. Houston and mm-hmm. Dallas struggle too.
Yeah.
All right. So,
but Austin is going to be killing it, guys.
Yeah.
Are they?
Love that 107 degree night in July.
Yeah. So
FC Austin takes the field.
It is scary because they're looking at whatever the new shiny toy is, whether it's a St. Louis, a Sacramento, an Austin, whatever the city might be, and then forgetting these teams that have been in the league for 25 years and are struggling. That's mm-hmm. the issue. You can't negate and overlook those franchises because the new shiny package isn't
there. Well, I'm sure what they're trying to do, and this is what the Big Ten did with the Big Ten Network, mm-hmm. and that's why we're saddled with Rutgers in the Big Ten, was because they were opening up two new TV markets.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. People don't care about Rutgers football
no.
in the New York metropolitan area, the largest media market in this country. So I can see what he's trying to do. He's like, well, we'll get this expansion fees. We'll get into more media markets, more eyeballs, blah, blah, blah. But you're asking a lot over the next not even decade to turn this into a TV deal that is truly lucrative. It's obviously no one expects it mm-hmm. to be NFL level or anything close. But I think what they're looking at is baseball and hockey and basketball. Mm-hmm. They have those local TV networks. But they've been around a lot longer.
LA Galaxy has a $55 million deal with Spectrum Sports. $55 million.
That's Spectrum just trying to make themselves legit. That's all that is.
Oh, yeah.
They're overpaying.
Absolutely.
It'll be interesting. I think it'll be a bit of solace if, you know, we do see this expansion of other teams and Sacramento gets a team under ownership that is anybody but Anthony Precourt. And Anthony Precourt is stuck in Austin with his stadium on a former, you know, nuclear waste site and, you know, bringing in, you know, dozens of fans on this privately financed stadium with all the, and while Sacramento is just killing it gangbusters in his backyard and he just is stuck with that. I think that would be some poetic justice.
Absolutely.
I don't know that it'll be best for the league, but I'll take it.
Well, it's going to be an interesting next 5, 6, 7 years because there are a lot of storm clouds on the horizon.
What was the name of that guy that had the Ponzi scheme a few years ago?
Bernie Madoff.
Yeah, like is Garber is that his the guy he's looking up to? Is Bernie Madoff?
I think it's well past the sell-by date for Don Garber, and this league needs new ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, the owners are going to turn against him because this is not a viable business.
It's not sustainable.
And I guess just one more point. There's also CBA negotiations coming up. That was one of the questions, like, is Don Garber, you know, are they going to renew Don Garber? Does Don Garber want to stick around and go through those negotiations? So when you are a salary cap league, when they're putting, you know, all these other weird, you've got all the other fun GAM and TAM and whatever the hell it is, and then you're going and, wait, you just upped it from 150 to 200. But we still get paid a base salary of $60,000.
That's going to be a problem.
And anything, where's this money going to? Right.
Well, I read a comment under the Deadspin article, and I'll leave it at this: that one guy was theorizing that the end game is 40 teams, so you could have an EPL, quote unquote, and a championship, quote unquote. And a lot of people would love to see relegation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we're ready for it, but maybe that's the plan. Maybe that's the plan all along. I don't know. But I think we got to leave it at here because we have two games to preview, and we will do that next on the Massive Report. Now we've blown 2 out of 3 of the segments as far as how we open them. We are 1 for 3. That seems appropriate. I'm Brian Phillips. We're back here at the Massive Report. Bart Logan has to talk about his bag before we do anything else.
That's right, Brian. Segment 3 is brought to you, as always, by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCG Bag on Twitter and Facebook at GCG Bag 96. And keep an eye out for this week's GCG Bag Scouting Report with Rick and Rick for all the most advanced digital simulation technology and in-depth analysis around to preview a couple of matchups this week. Only and exclusively on GCG Bag TV. Check it out on YouTube as well. Just search GCG Bag 96. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing.
Thank you, Bart. You know, we went all the way to Australia to find an expert on the Houston Dynamo, but we're not even ready for him yet because we have a match on Wednesday. DC United losing to the Nazi-friendly NYCFC last night. I saw it on ESPN. 2-0. I didn't see that coming. Did you guys watch the match at all? I did not. I was doing chores.
I missed it.
I saw a little bit of the highlights, but wasn't much to...
No, to not for them, to. But they were rolling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, did Ronnie miss... I think he missed the last game because of that red card. Did you guys see that red card that he had where he had his studs up?
Took
that guy's leg.
You miss games, you know. If that's anybody in black and yellow, I mean, they're missing a handful of games with that too. And that's Wayne Rooney. Though.
Well,
he
wasn't accountable for being drunk in the airport, and he's not accountable for that either. But any time a player like Rooney comes to Columbus, it's exciting.
Absolutely.
I think we talked about this last week. How do teams market the other team's stars? You got to let people know because you want people to come out and see the match. And maybe they become fans. Maybe they've never been before, but they've heard of Wayne Rooney. He is a colossal figure in this game in the last 10 to 15 years. He's entertaining to watch. He plays for DC United, which makes it fun. As I was saying last week, I'm in favor of this becoming a real thing again. DC mm-hmm. United, for years, has not held up their part of the bargain.
Right.
In the 90s, this was a thing. And they were, mm-hmm. you know, back in John Harkes' days,
yeah.
that was, you know, that was our principal rival. Granted, there was only 10 teams.
Who won that first game?
That's true. Right. 4-0.
Yeah.
4-0.
So it's sort of been in the background for a long time. And I feel like this year it can become a thing again.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts when, unfortunately, the game's on a Wednesday, which kind of sucks, because it's our only home look at DC mm-hmm. United. A, since they played yesterday, how much will we see Wayne Rooney?
Rooney's going to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's what, 33, I think? 33, 34.
Something like
his
that.
Hair plugs are five.
that's a good point. That's a good point. Hey, you know, you're talking about him being drunk in an airport. Who hasn't been drunk in an airport before,
bro? I have to get loaded to get on a plane all the time, but I seem to know how to behave myself.
Never been arrested.
Well, look, let's be honest. Wayne Rooney has the face of a soccer hooligan. If he was not a brilliant soccer player, he would be fighting opposing fans.
Oh, absolutely.
And to his credit, when I watched him in the playoffs last year, he looked great. I mean, is he at his peak? No. He's not with the British team any longer. But he still plays at a high level. Mm-hmm. He's still a guy that's going out there and working. So he's not mailing it in.
No,
which
he
seen
can play.
From some of these other guys.
And so. I think it's my duty to also point out that Alex Stanek guaranteed everybody last year that Wayne Rooney was going to be completely washed out. So if you see Alex, just make sure to give him shame, tweet him, bug him, you know, add him a whole bunch, slide in his DMs and say he's got terrible analysis. Whatever you feel like you
wow,
need to
he's
do.
He's not here to defend himself.
Perfect.
That's why I show up every week. I don't want to ever be torn apart
exactly.
by you Wolverines.
Hey, that's okay. In the group text that you're not in, Brian.
Oh, I see. You should, so. I see.
No, but, you know, the thing with Rooney is he can play. And, you know, these people who say, you know, MLS is a retirement league and blah, 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 blah. Okay, it was 10 years ago, sure, 12 years ago. But Zlatan, Wayne Rooney, these guys can still play at a high level. Mm-hmm. Can they play at Manchester United? Okay, maybe not. But you're talking about one of the top 10 clubs in the
sure.
world. All right? So if he can't play there, but he can play well in MLS, I'm fine with it. It's not a bad thing.
He could play for Everton still, right?
Absolutely.
They had a big win yesterday.
Yeah.
That kind of came
out of
nowhere.
The other thing is he's actually, you know, it's not like with so many of these other teams where it's, if I'm going to Cincinnati, I'm playing on turf at Nippert Stadium, or, you know, you're actually playing on the best surface in MLS. So, I think that's one of those things that would be a holdup for a lot of those players. You know, Zlatan's not going to go and mess around on turf or AstroTurf or something like, you know, what the Astro don't, or not, what is the, up in Montreal where they used
to
have that?
Olympic Stadium.
Yeah. Like that, you know, just absolute garbage. But here in Columbus, especially not that much travel, you're not, you know, flying coast to coast. I think we see
the resurgence of DC United last year was because of Wayne Rooney and, of course, Acosta as well. Mm-hmm. But it was Wayne Rooney. The guy can play. So Stanek, dead wrong. 100%.
All right. We talked about Rooney. That's the obvious guy to talk to about with DC United. But give me a couple other guys that we should watch out for and how we can win the game.
Acosta was attempted to be purchased by St. Paris Germain. Okay,
mm-hmm. that's a,
or Paris Saint Germain, excuse me, PSG.
That's pretty impressive.
That shows that they have talent there. Of course, they have Bill Hamid, who you know, he has a gaffe every once in a while, but he's a legitimate national pool keeper. Okay, they have good players. Now, I don't know. I don't love Ben Olsen so much as a coach. He's been very, very mediocre for about 10 years. I feel like
what is it about his coaching style that you don't like?
This is more of a personal thing, but he always looks like he's going to cry.
Well, that's not exactly what I was expecting. But I can see it. I can close my eyes and see it. You're right.
I mean, he was a good, hardworking player.
Sure he was.
But I don't know that he's a particularly great tactician.
Okay.
Because they've had talent there for years, and they've underachieved, underperformed. And I think the ownership group bought into him and said, hey, we're going to give him a couple years in the new stadium, all this kind of thing. He has to prove himself now. So, you know, now it's kind of put up or shut up to see if he can really make things happen there. But they have a good, talented team.
Bart?
You know, I mean, yeah, obviously Acosta's the big one. I thought Paul Ariola's been one of, or Ariola's been one of their stronger ones. You know, up nearly 10 assists last year. You know, gets a couple looks, and I think I believe he's now getting DP dollars. I was, you know, disappointed for, you know, for them, and I think fortunate for Columbus with the departure of Yamil Assad. I thought he's been, you know, such a great player, and would have liked Crew to pick him up last year when he became available from Atlanta. But I think that's a big loss for them to fill up. But Ariola has been pretty strong. And then, you know, obviously Acosta, again, you know, a real special player and fun to watch.
Yeah, and the thing with Ariola, I mean, look what he's been doing lately with the national team. He's been very solid for them. So the team can play.
Playing all over, too.
Absolutely. I mean, he can play right mid. He can play both midfielder spots. He can play winger. So he's a guy who's very versatile. But, you know, the thing with this group is whenever it's D.C. and Columbus, even though D.C.'s kind of struggled in years past, it's always – there's something that takes it back to those good old days, even though there's no connection in terms of anything anymore.
Yeah.
But there's something about it, just two original teams battling. I think it's going to be a heck of a game, and I'm really excited to see Rooney in Columbus.
Well, I'm glad that they had to play last night. We played the night before. And they're not coming off like an eight-day break. I could see MLS doing this. It's like, yeah, they've had 10 days off, and Columbus Crew played last night, and they're going to play again against DC United. So I feel like it's fair there. We're paranoid about that stuff here. So I like that both teams have to deal with the same stuff coming off and not much time to prepare and lineups that maybe look a little different. Give me a score. I'm tired of picking scores because I'm always wrong. Because I pick too many goals.
That's MLS for you. MLS would make a gambler go broke.
Yeah, I would never Vegas and gamble on MLS, ever.
No chance. I'm going to go, you know what? I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1, all right. Bart?
I'll go with 2-1, since, you know, I've got to pick
2-1
them to
DC,
win.
Right?
Oh, no. Of course, the Columbus Crew, the world's greatest team. I will pick them to win every game. They may not now. Turns out it doesn't look like they're going to go undefeated this season, despite, you know, my great analysis prior to the season. But I think as much as it's, you know, I don't want to be melodramatic, but I think this is an important game for them.
It is.
You know, by the end of this stretch, they're going to be nearly a third of the way done with the season, and we're only going to be, not even into May yet, just with the way how front-loaded and now how compressed as well this schedule is. And so we've seen how they've, you know, fallen over these past couple of weeks. You get two bad results and you went from the top of the table to, you know, middling, and really there are a lot of teams within shooting distance, and just like these, you know, short compressed schedules are a chance for you to make up a lot of points and build up. You need to get points out of these, because later in the season, when you're not playing games, when everyone's got games in hand, it would be nice to have a little bit of a cushion.
Bart, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you have any like standings up or anything, but I know DC had a 400-plus minute stretch to start out the season where they didn't give up a goal. Their defense, I mean, Steve Birnbaum at center back, Hamid was amazing. I believe both teams are at 8 goals against, or 7?
9 for DC, 8 for Columbus.
Okay, 9.
Right. So they're kind of in the same boat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where I don't think you're going to see a high-scoring affair. But with it being MLS, it could be 6-5.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'll be interested to see, as we always are with these games on top of each other, what the starting 11 looks like. I think the center backs are going to look different. I don't know what the combination of the three.
Do we
one's
see
out,
Wallace
two's
Abubakar
in
at some point here?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wasn't Abubakar shipped out to Pittsburgh? Is he back? What is he doing? I forgot. There's two. Oh, well. You know, I try. Well, we'll see what the starting 11 looks like on Wednesday. We've got to move along. We've made our picks for DC United because Saturday we're at Houston. And so we've gone all the way to Australia to get Greg Benson.
I don't know why you had to go all the way to Australia. I've lived here for 7 years.
Okay, well, that's
so.
Yeah, I really wish Sam had
let us know. I'm in Worthington. You can just knock on my door.
He has a Worthington accent.
It's a Worthington accent. I'm not foreign. I'm just pretentious.
Greg. Greg, where are you from in Australia?
I am actually from Sydney, and I was a panelist on the Massive Report for 2 years.
Well, I wasn't here, so I don't know.
Clearly.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's great to have you.
It is good to be back.
So, what in Australia, how big a deal is professional soccer compared to other sports?
They have the same problem in Australia as what they have here in the United States, and that is that soccer is not the preeminent sport, and it's not the preeminent football code. You know, we're over here, if you play it in the wintertime, you're competing with, you know, football and basketball and hockey. If you play it in the summer, you're competing with baseball and, well, not really much else, to be honest. Maybe the poker tour is on ESPN or something. But in Australia, you're competing with either cricket or Aussie rules or rugby league or, you know, whatever part of the country that you happen to be in, that can determine which sport that you're up against. You know, I've gone into this in detail actually on this show before, where I've talked about, you know, how soccer was considered for many, many years the immigrants' game, and
really?
going to Dynamo games in Houston. That's I get that, like, people say that to me too. I go into bars after games and they're like, "You're a white guy. What are you doing at the game?" Like, as if only like Hispanics go to watch it. And in Australia, it's, you know, if you're from the Greek or Italian or you know, the former Yugoslav communities, or you're Hungarian or Polish or something like that, those were the communities that came to Australia big time in the post-war years, and they brought soccer with them. So for a long time, the Australian national team was basically just second-generation kids of these immigrants who had come down.
Good team.
Yeah, no, it was...
Who's the greatest Australian player of all time?
It's got to be Tim Cahill.
Absolutely. All right, that's the obvious answer. I was thinking maybe it would be somebody else.
And I'm wondering if you were talking... I'm wondering if you were talking to Sam before the start of the show.
No.
I wasn't sure.
That was the answer I was expecting. I was just checking because you grew up there, well, so you would know.
Yeah, and I don't know if this speaks more to my... the size of Australia's population, or the lack thereof. But Tim Cahill and I actually went to school together for a couple of years.
Did you really?
In the same class.
What was he like?
I don't really remember. I mean,
were you than him? Well, it was just one injury and then otherwise.
Who did better with girls? You or Tim Cahill?
Well, I mean, it was third and fourth grade, so we weren't really thinking about that.
Fair enough. Greatest band all time from Australia?
Oh, I got to go with Midnight Oil, mate.
I love the Oils.
How many
times did you see them live?
I have seen them but once live. And,
really?
And
me
strangely,
too.
Strangely enough, it was in Cleveland last year.
I saw them a quarter century ago.
Wow.
And they were a machine.
They were always a bucket list item in Australia. Never really got around to it. I was too busy seeing American bands that came down here. Now I come over to the States to go see Midnight Oil.
I gotcha. Yeah. All right. Well, in a roundabout way, to quote Monty Python, is Monty Python big in Australia?
Yeah, they are, actually. Right, yeah, a lot of British TV, as you can imagine, makes
all right,
it.
Good.
Makes
in
it
a roundabout on, so. Way, you've become a supporter of the Houston Dynamo. And we're glad to have you here because
you.
We're playing them on Saturday at Houston.
Yeah.
What can Crew SC expect from a team that they don't really see all that often?
They don't see them all that often, and that works against both sides because, you know, obviously you're in opposite conferences. That's the way MLS works. You get to see these guys once a year, and that's it. Before 2015, when the Dynamo moved back to the West, they would see the Crew two or three times a year, and, you know, 13, 14, they played each other three times each, and, you know, got a lot more familiar with one another. But, of course, most of the squads have kind of sort of cycled through, and not too many players who are around in those years are still there. So it's really hard to get a bead on who it is that you're actually up against. The best thing that you can do is sort of watch game film and kind of keep your thumb on the pulse of who's performing well. And the Dynamo have got a lot of young guys. And I'm not really sure what to make of this team either, you know, watching them as I do. Because, you know, yeah, they're 4-1-1. They just suffered their first loss of the season at the Galaxy on Saturday, which was a bit of a stinger because it was a last-minute goal that won it. And they'd really sort of fought back to get back into that game. They've only given up 8 goals in 6 games. 3 of those were from the penalty spot. So, you know, Joe Willis hasn't had a lot to do, but he's...
3 from the penalty spot.
3 from the penalty spot, yeah. They have... Yeah, they've got a basically brand-new back line this season. They replaced their centre-back pairing. Who was it that Philip Senderos is gone, as is Adolfo Machado. So they've cycled through to guys like Minor Figueroa, a guy from Slovenia. I can't pronounce his name. I can't remember exactly
how it.
If I can bring the lineup back.
We don't have enough time. Go ahead.
But they are
a lot of consonants in that one.
their defense has been a weak spot in the last couple of years. They've had no trouble putting the ball in the net, but they don't have any clean sheets from their six games this season either. So you really don't know what kind of team's going to show up. But their front three pairing at the moment of Albert Elise, Mara Minotis, and Memo Rodriguez, all guys who they're all 23 years old. They can run for days. They've got plenty of speed, and Houston historically has been an excellent counter-attacking team, which is something that Columbus has struggled against in recent years. So I think for me, the biggest thing that Columbus is going to have to do is they're going to have to watch the wingbacks or watch the wing play in general, because whoever it is that's playing left and right back at the moment is going to have to deal with Elise and Rodriguez. And Elise in particular has just been on a tear lately. He's got four goals, three assists in his six games, and he's virtually unstoppable. He's one of the fastest players in the league.
Yeah, he's like lightning in a bottle, that guy. He can run.
Well, that's and never gives up on the ball either. He's a couple of the goals that he's either created or scored this season have been from situations where by all rights, the ball should have gone out, or it should have got away from him, but just keeps trucking, never gives up. And that's something that a team that this season Columbus has made a couple of mistakes in the back. There was the one against Portland that they had that was a bit of a howler. They do that against Houston, it's going to be a long night for them.
Well, and that creates problems for us, because and we're thin in the outside defense, mm-hmm. with the injuries.
Yeah,
and we still, even under Caleb Porter, we're trying to get these guys forward into mm-hmm. the attack. So maybe that'll be a thing where you kind of have to abandon that and account for these players that you were talking about.
Yeah.
From the Houston side, when they game plan for this, who are they concerned about on the Columbus side?
Well, it's a really good question. Having seen the way that Pedro Santos has been playing the last couple of weeks, he's made some good moves off the ball. He's scored a couple of goals, which, I guess he's overachieving compared to games past.
Yep.
But, they're going to be watching him as well, because, your outside backs for the Dynamo at the moment. Let me just pull up their lineup from the last game. I know AJ De La Garza is out on the right, and he's had some knee problems in the last couple of years. Not to mention he's north of 30, and he doesn't have a heck of a lot of speed. Santos is going to be difficult for him to contend with, but they've got guys that can. Let's see. Let me bring up my Lundqvist on the left back. I'm a little bit more secure about him. He's played really, really well in sort of shutting down a lot of counterattacks and preventing some good wing play from the right of offense.
The thing with De La Garza, he's a smart player. I mean, he's been around the league a long time. He played for Galaxy forever. So he's one of those guys that, and it's not like Santos is a burner per se at all. That could be a fun matchup to watch for sure, and especially if they're going to line up in the same type of formation that they did this go around, which mm-hmm. I think would make sense. Meaning the crew, because the way Porter generally looks at opposing teams and goes, how can we minimize their strengths and exploit their weaknesses? Well, their strengths are the speed, Greg was just talking about. So I think you're going to see a lot less of Jimenez and Francis pushing up, or they're going to get beat bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
What do you take about Memo Rodriguez? A player who seems to have made a bunch of strides this season. I mean, a young American player.
Yep.
Four goals so far, I think, in not only three starts. Playing really well. And I imagine he's forcing himself into the, starting 11 for this matchup, too.
He really is, and he's given Wilmer Cabrera a lot to think about. Memo is one of Houston's I'd argue he's one of their best products mm-hmm. as far as over the course of the history of their franchise. The way that he's grown, especially in the early part of this season, has been so fun to watch. He strikes the ball well. He plays good, smart, heads-up play. And again, he's 23. He's got the youth. He's got the legs. He keeps playing like this. I don't know how much longer they're going to hang on to him, because, he and the same with Minotis, who broke out last season, set a club record for goals scored. Those guys are really looking to kind of sort of pad out their resume at the moment and see if somebody comes calling. I mean, obviously they're focused on what's coming up for Houston, but they're all playing at a level that if they continue to do it, get as much as you can out of these guys while you can, because they're not going to be around for very much longer.
Greg, when you go to Houston to take in a game, what is the perfect night for going to a Houston game? Because I've never been to Houston, so I have no concept of where the stadium is and what there is to do around there. What's the perfect night? How would you plan it out?
The stadium is right across the street, basically, from Minute Maid Park where the Astros play.
It's
right downtown. There's light rail that accesses to it. It's an easy walk, and there's a lot of bars and pubs and a couple of breweries in the.
Where do you go? What's your go-to?
Lucky's is one of the bars that I hit up on a regular basis. That's right across the street. Brian Ching just opened a new bar in the last few months himself.
Really?
What's it called? Pitch 25 is what it's called. And I'm going there for the first time this weekend.
Are going down?
Yeah, okay. we're actually driving down, my fiance and I, because I'm insane.
Are you crazy down for this?
Yeah,
it's like a 25-hour drive.
She's just nodding solemnly over in the corner like, yes, we're
actually
doing this.
She's dreading every second of that.
She's agreed to spend the rest of her life with me, so 16 hours in a car.
See how far that accent gets you?
I'm not going to lie. It's helped.
That is a long drive.
See, if I moved back to Australia, I just had to get by on my looks and personality, and that's not happening.
In Australia, you're used to driving long distances, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. Well, I mean, kind of, yeah. See, the thing is, when you grow up in a place like Sydney, everything that you need is within the Sydney metro area, so you really don't have to drive that far. If you've got relatives in Melbourne or Brisbane or somewhere like that, yeah, you'll get in the car. But it's like a $100 round-trip airfare as well for a one-hour flight or 1.5 hours. So most of the time, given the choice, we'll just hop on a plane and go to Melbourne instead.
But we can
drive if we have places that we desperately need to go.
But you have to look out for the roving gangs when you're driving out there in the desert, you know, Mad Max style.
If somebody's just filming another Wolf Creek movie, he's just being filmed out there. They don't even realize it's a film.
Is this Road Warrior we've said?
Yeah, basically.
Hey, so who's your A-League team?
My A-League team, Sydney FC.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, born and raised. So
were you? So what do you think of Western Sydney? Do you hate them?
I haven't listened. And here's the problem. I said to Steph on the way here, I said, I wish I'd actually stop and listen to a couple of recent episodes of Massive Report so I could actually tell what level the show is at now as far as how much I can get away with. Bugger them. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Is
that a good level to get away with? Or
I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to.
What does that mean?
It means I don't like them very much.
Okay.
Not at all. You know how
is
you
that
guys
a swear
you know,
word in Australia?
You know how you guys felt when Seattle came into the league and started crowing about like they own the place.
Yeah
same
Bogram.
Thing.
I mean, when Seattle created
what does
Bogram the sport
mean?
Of soccer.
Yes,
define Bogram.
No, Atlanta did.
It just means we're telling them to rack
it's
off.
It's horseshit.
Yeah, it's basically yeah.
All right, we can do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I swore earlier in the podcast, and Sam didn't smack me in the head.
I'm sure there are Western Sydney Wanderers fans out there who aren't colossal dickheads, but I haven't ever met them. That's my point.
If you are here in Columbus and a Western Sydney Wanderers fan, come prove us wrong.
You know what? So I own a variety of soccer jerseys. My favorite is the Sydney FC one.
Okay, good.
He
says that to every international guest we have.
He's like a touring musician going, we love you, Chattanooga. You're the best place in the world that we've ever performed in.
He was going on and on about the second division in the Czech Republic. Unbelievable.
Oh, well, you should listen out for Cards Against Insanity. Wait, has that already happened? Are we splicing
No, we haven't done that.
No, we'll do that after the fact. But in any case,
I've got to
splice in a little bit about the Swedish second division because I got something about that coming up. You'll love it.
All right, well let's do our
go
our scores because we got to get out of here. Hendox is going to close pretty soon. We've been here so long.
Oh man, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
I need score picks from you guys. Who wants to go first for the Houston game?
How about our Houston fan?
All right, Greg.
My biggest concern coming into this game as a Houston fan is that Houston's won 4 games out of their 6 so far this season. Only one of those wins, though, was against a team that's in a playoff position right now, and that's Montreal Impact. So I really don't know. They've beaten Vancouver. They beat Colorado on the road, but I really don't know what this team is yet. They're obviously a young team that's been rebuilding for a year or so now because you know they kind of flamed out last season and missed the playoffs after going all the way to the conference final the year before. But none of those wins this season have really been quality wins. Even the one against Montreal, they kind of had to dig deep and get a last minute winner from a notice. So I really don't know what to expect from this game, and I also know that the home team has held serve in this series for the last few years. Houston's won. There's only been one time that either of the teams, or one time each, that either of the teams has picked up a road win. Columbus picked one up in 2011, and the Dynamo won here in Columbus in 07. But other than that, it's been draws or wins for the home team. With that said... I'm predicting 2-1 to Houston. I think it's going to be a tough game. I really don't think they're going to get the shutout because they don't seem to be able to do that at the moment. They don't have the shutdown defense that is kind of required to stay competitive at this level. They've only lost once, but the schedule from here gets absolutely brutal for them for what it's worth. They go to Seattle after this. They have a home game against Dallas, which is always a tilt with the Texas Derby. It's a big deal. They host Portland in the future, and then they've got DC coming to town as well. And, you know, that's going to tell me a lot more than I think this game about what the team's really made of. But I think they'll grind out a home win just because that's what the home team does in this series.
I'm going to go with a 3-2 win for the Columbus Crew.
Wow. That's a lot of goals. Surprise.
It is. But I had to find a way for the Crew to beat. And I think this is a Houston team
that will
score goals. I mean, you look at the young talent, and that is the big thing. I mean, you mentioned what all three of them are so 23 years of age, don't know any better. But also, you know, putting up really good performances. And so I had to kind of reverse engineer it to find a way for the Crew to win. And in order for them to do so, okay, they would have to score three.
Score more. It doesn't matter how many you give up,
smoke
just as long as you put more on the
smoke
other
is
end.
Pouring
fire wagon Bart's soccer.
Head.
I love it.
I hate to say this, but I'm going to go 2-0 Houston in that game.
Oh, all right. Well, that'll make Greg happy. Greg, I enjoyed very much meeting you.
Likewise.
I still don't entirely understand how you're a Houston supporter from Australia. But
it's a Houston sports thing. I mean, I'm here in a Rockets hat, and I'm follow the Astros.
How long were you in Houston? You lived there?
I didn't live there, but of all the places that I've been to in the U.S., I've been in the country for 15 years.
Okay.
And of all the places I've lived in the or haven't lived in the U.S., Houston's far and away where I've spent the most time. I've got a bunch of friends there. I've made a ton of really good memories.
Can you do us
there.
A favor?
Name
and
it.
Move there for 4 years, just 4 years, because I want you to pick up a mix of like a Texas accent and an Australian accent.
Well, Texas is kind of like Australia, ain't it? Right?
Kind of, except for all of the other ways.
It would be better than whatever Brad Friedel has of an accent right now, whatever the American English thing that he's got.
You should have heard me on the Massive Report a couple of years ago, mate. Nobody could understand me. In fact, my fiance and I met through me doing episodes of this show and sort of interacting with fans back and forth on Twitter, which I'm not on anymore. Yeah, no. Yeah, well, you're welcome for not being on Twitter anymore?
You're welcome for meeting her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's great. But the first time that we met, she was like, I didn't recognize you from Massive Report because your accent sounds entirely different. Like I went with this sort of smoothed over Midwestern thing to try and actually be understood. Because I know it's a podcast and you can't do subtitles here.
Right.
So I needed
to... We're
working
on it.
stay tuned. 2022, I'm sure it'll happen. But yeah, no, I just kind of smoothed off the accent in order to reach.
What's your best American accent? Can you do a couple?
I'll probably wind up doing it during Cards Against Insanity. Okay. So stick around. Yeah, I bet you never thought you'd hear that music again, did you? Good evening, everyone. Happy Easter Monday as we celebrate it in Australia with a public holiday, may I add, because there's not a religious festival we won't turn into an excuse to drink. And happy belated 420 if you're just waking up. My name is Greg Benson, and this is a very special, one-show-only, no-encores edition of Cards Against Insanity, episode 65 of the format, if you're keeping score, because I think I'm the only one who did, and returning after a three-and-a-half-year absence. You all look great. Hope you're well. How are the kids? For anyone not familiar with the format, I would read through the sports funnies each week and present each one with a yellow card for reckless or ridiculous behavior. You know how Bill Maher has his new rules segment at the end of his show and Keith Olbermann used to have his worst in the world bit? Yeah, it's kind of like that, only exactly the same and harder to understand. The most egregious offense of the week would get a red card and a brief, somewhat politically charged monologue, after which I'd go home, check Twitter, and discover that, upon listening to the episode, the Massive Report audience had once again told me to stick to sports and stop pushing your agenda, you liberal beta cuck. Cook? Cuck? I don't know. I've only ever seen that word written. I have no idea what that means, but suffice to say, I am no longer on Twitter. Enough exposition, let's go fishing. Opinions are mine and don't necessarily reflect those of the Massive Report or Columbus Crew SC. The Massive Report would have earned the first yellow card of the night because I've been here since the opening segment, and what I've heard is that, well, the more things change, the more they stay the same, don't they? But I'm a nice guy, which you know, because I had to announce it. So you're getting off with a warning for now. Yellow card instead to Mattias Osgun, the 21-year-old playing for Degerfors in the Swedish 2nd Division, came on for the last 10 minutes of his side's clash with Östers and then was immediately forced off again with an injury.
It's not that he had to come off. It's why, or should I say, I. While going for a high five with Axel Lindahl, the player he was replacing, Özgün cupped a finger to the eye and needed subsequent medical treatment. He is okay. He did manage to see out the game in a limited capacity, and it finished 1-1. But to botch that so close to National High Five Day... Yes, that was a real holiday, by the way, that was last week. Don't worry if you missed it. If you're white, you get a do-over, since it was a bad one anyway. Yellow card to Moussa Sissoko. The Tottenham midfielder was subbed off with an injury during Spurs' Champions League tilt against Manchester City last week. And when City's Raheem Sterling looked to have scored a second-half stoppage-time goal that would have made the score 5-3 and essentially knocked Sissoko and Spurs out of the tournament, the Frenchman went off to the dressing room to have a bit of a pout. If you actually watch the game, you'll know that Sterling's goal was disallowed. Tottenham went through on away goals, and that left poor sulking Sissoko... Sissoko? Yeah, whatever. Lonesome in the sheds without so much as a TV showing the game to let him know what had actually happened. Sissoko said, "I was so upset that I returned directly to the dressing room. In my head, we were eliminated." He only made it back up to pitch level after an unnamed Spurs employee came down to check the room, saw Sissoko sitting disconsolate on the bench all by himself, and yelled out that the goal had been cancelled and Spurs had advanced. Seems like a lot of wasted effort to me. Had Sissoko gone to the restroom instead, Tottenham would have scored twice and won by more, but what would I know about such things? Yellow card to a Twitter user who only goes by Adam. If you're on Twitter and your name is Adam, I might be talking about you. Stay tuned. A fan of River Plate in Argentina, who, for clarity, is presumably not named Adam, decided to commemorate his team's Copa Libertadores victory over arch-rivals Boca Juniors by getting a tattoo of a QR code that, when scanned, linked to a YouTube video of all of River's goals in the 5-3 win. I use the past tense linked very deliberately because it doesn't work anymore. Not sure if Adam's a bitter Boca fan or what prompted this pettiness, but Adam retweeted the original news article about the tattoo and reported the linked video to YouTube for copyright infringement, and sure enough, the video got the Alex Jones treatment and was promptly scrubbed from the servers, rendering the tattoo completely useless. That is, unless the QR code comes back around to working again in a few years. You know, kind of like how old phone numbers get reassigned? And the River Plate fan's going to be able to get $5 off his next order at California Pizza Kitchen. I have no idea how technology works, but Twitter is still trash. Yellow card to David Schultz, not spelled like it sounds. He's a writer for Canada's Globe and Mail and a spitting image for a late 2000s FIFA rendering of the MyPillow guy. Seriously, look him up. Schultz was apparently really mad that the NHL, of course it's a hockey story because Canada, scheduled Game 6 of the Boston Bruins-Toronto Maple Leafs series for Sunday afternoon, Easter Sunday to be specific. Quote, "Nice to know the NHL and NBC have the fans' interests at heart. Game 6 of Leafs-Bruins series is Easter Sunday. Game time has still not been determined. Good luck with those family plans on one of the holiest days of the year," end quote. I mean, it's no National High Five Day or Rex Manning Day, but I can see his point, I guess. I don't know. My impression was that Canada was a socialist, atheistic hellscape with weed and healthcare and... Oh, that's God Keep Our Land in the anthem. See, this whole time I thought they were singing Gord Keep Our Land. You know, like the guy from the Tragically Hip? Rest in peace. Am I the only one who's been to Canada recently? Whatever. Yellow card to the unnamed Levski Sofia fan who took exception to his team dropping a 2-0 decision to Ludogorets and decided to take matters into his own hands. Ludogorets defender Cosman Moti scored a late penalty to put the visitors 2-0 in front and got himself sent off in the process after running over to taunt the supporters section. But Moti isn't getting my yellow card because I'm not a Bulgarian referee. He already took care of that. But it goes to the Levski fan after he jumped on top of the players' tunnel in the ensuing riot, hoping to take a kick at Moti as he was walking off the pitch. But because this is on Cards Against Insanity, you know exactly how this ends. The plan fell through, or rather, the fan fell through, when the tunnel's roof collapsed under his weight due to far too many helpings of, frantically Googling local cuisine in Bulgaria, Telesco Vareno. Let's go with that. Whatever it was, he had a lot of it. See, that's not how you handle things, Levski Sofia fans. When the visiting team in a green kit scores against you in front of your supporters section, you're supposed to just throw beer cans. What, still too soon? Whatever. And finally, red cards to Steve Stone and Jason Benetti, the play-by-play partnership for NBC's coverage of the Chicago White Sox. I know they still have a team with uniforms and everything. Can you believe it? And can you believe I'm definitely not still bitter about the 2005 World Series? Well, apparently they can believe it, because they'll believe just about anything. In an interview with the Chicago Sun-Times, Stone declared that he is, in fact, a psychic and has been predicting big plays for the White Sox for years. "I've been psychic my whole life," Stone said. "If I play it up, people will laugh because nobody's always right." I'll pause and let you digest the dichotomy for a moment there. But his colleague Benetti said, quote, "There are times when Steve will, before something happens, take a piece of paper and write down what's going to happen. I see him do it. After the play, he'll flip it over and it'll be what happened," end quote. He went on to claim that Shaman Steve, his words, God not mine, has never been wrong with the paper trick and that he'd know because they sit really close together in the booth. The White Sox are 8-12 and in fourth place and in what was the worst division in baseball last year, so I'm guessing he writes ground out to pitcher a lot. Come on, people, psychics? Why does anyone still buy into this crap? Honestly, it's 2019. Wait, I think I just answered my own question. Never mind. Stone said he doesn't give his predictions on the air because we'd hate to actually test this scientifically, but two examples cited of his supposed clairvoyance were Juan Uribe hitting an extra innings walk-off homer in a game in 2007, a year in which he hit 20 home runs, so no real stretch there, and a no-hit bid against the Sox being broken up late in the game this season by an Alex Gordon hit. No-hitters happen roughly twice a year in baseball, so again, I'm not really impressed. Look, predicting sports is fun, guys. We all do it when someone's about to take a free kick or a penalty in an MLS game or a field goal in football. We bet on lines and over-unders, and we play fantasy sports based on how we think certain players will perform on a given day or night. It's part of sports fandom, and there's no harm in it, per se. But I'm sure that if you got Steve Stone in a lab with no access to any predictive tools and tell him to predict what the score in the next White Sox game will be, or even what's going to happen on the next pitch, I'm willing to place a bet of my own on his rate of success being somewhere around literally anyone else who is paid to cover baseball. That's how it works. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. And in an era where fake news went from being something we all giggled at on The Onion to something being weaponized by political figures, I'd love to be able to turn a blind eye to this as just a bit of knockabout fun, because nobody's getting hurt by this, right? Well, not to get all John Oliver on you here, but when you start chucking words like psychic around, which not only carries a massive empirical claim, but it's also responsible for bilking a lot of gullible folks out of their cash, I have every right to raise the people's eyebrow of skepticism and call you out. The article also covers Stone believing in reincarnation, which is whatever, my 12-year-old does too, but she really likes wolves, and she'd rather be a wolf than a human kid being accosted by her father to chew with her mouth closed and pick up her towel off the bathroom floor. The wolf pack cares not for such trivial matters, Dad. But at the end of the day, while there are self-proclaimed psychics out there who say they can talk to the dead who have passed on to the emptiness of space, I suppose I'll admit that it's nice to have someone who restricts his psychic abilities, rather, to talking to the emptiness of the White Sox stadium. My name is Greg Benson. You cannot find me on Twitter because Twitter is trash, but you can find me on Facebook as That One Guy Greg, and if you're at Hendox Pub, yeah, you bet your ass you're still in my seat. A reminder to use the hashtag MRCards. I don't know why, since I have no earthly way of checking it. I won't know what you're trying to tell me, and I'm not going to be here next week anyway. I think I copied this from an old script. I'm out of practice. Until the next time I get bitten by the narcissism bug and need to show my face around these parts again, play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
And with that, it's another edition of the Massive Report in the can, courtesy of our good friends at 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your part in developing, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. For Bart, for Mike, for Greg, our expert from Australia on Houston, for Sam, I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD1025, and listen to the Massive Report to win tickets to the DC United game on Wednesday. And we'll see you back here next week at Hendox.